Welcome everyone to Team Early Childhood Podcast. This week we've got Dr. Sue Allingham. Hi Sue.
Hi Aaron. Hi everybody.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Bit nervous, but I know you'll put me at my ease.
Oh, there's nothing to be nervous about. Everyone loves hearing all about our lovely discussions. So Sue, you're going to be discussing with us this week about transitions in early childhood.
Mm-hmm. I am.
And basically, I always ask a few questions to the people who I'm interviewing. And the sixth question is always the same, which is basically about your wishes for the future. And these can be for the workforce, for the sector, or they can be for yourself. So people are really, really interested to hear about what your wishes are. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, Dr. Sue, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I'm Sue Allingham, and I have been in and around teaching and early years, I usually say for about 100 years because it makes people laugh, but since about, I don't know, 1980, 81.
And I wasn't even born then.
I know you weren't. And I just because I've got sons older than you, thank you. Obviously, I'm not anywhere near old enough to look as if I've been around teaching since then, but I have. And I started to get an interest in early years. Well, probably almost as soon as I started teaching, but it gradually formed over a few years until about 1986, 1987, when I went into my first early years class. I'd been up and down infants into what used to be called middle infants, and then I went across into doing some junior work, and then it was only after I'd had my second son and I was in juniors at that point doing some part-time work that I finally ended up with a nursery place, a part-time nursery job. Right. And that was where it started to become an interest of mine in early years. I took that nursery class up into reception, still part-time. And while I was doing that part-time reception as a job share, I got offered the early years coordinator role as a job share. So that was where it really took off. And that must be about 1980, a long time ago. anyway, so after that, I then worked my way through sort of finding out a bit more about early years, developing my role. I got a substantive post as an early years coordinator at my local school and gradually worked my way through the ranks to become a lead teacher for the local authority in early years. Then I got my MA. Somebody handed me a leaflet. It's very serendipitous. Somebody handed me a leaflet for the first ever distance learning MA at University of Sheffield.
Yeah.
And they handed it to me and said, you'd like this. So I applied, and myself and Di Chilvers met up on the first ever cohort of the early childhood education MA at Sheffield, which was, again, as I say, serendipitous, because obviously Di and I are still friends. Lots of links have been made through that. Then I went on to do the EdD. Then I was a local authority advisor in early years. Then I started to write for Early Years Educator. Then I met Helen Bromley, and that was a pivotal moment. Do you know Helen Bromley?
I don't know.
Many people listening will have heard of the lovely Helen. Sadly, she's no longer with us, but she was a national literacy independent consultant. She did a lot of work with CLPE. And she completely revolutionised my life and became a dear friend. And I thought then, I want to be Helen.
Yeah.
Sadly, she passed away before she saw me become an independent consultant. But I still model myself on the Helen Bromley that we all knew and loved.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Oh, and Just to say, you're doing so much at the moment, Sue, aren't you? I mean, if people haven't, you've been doing so much during like COVID times. You've definitely done some work for Family and Kinderly, haven't you?
I've done a few bits for Family, and I've got my second webinar for Kinderly tomorrow.
Yeah.
And obviously the Early Years Educator articles are still bumbling on.
Yeah. And you've got some books as well.
I've done a couple of books. They spun off the Early Years Educator role because Practical Preschool is another arm of the same publishing company.
Yeah.
And the first one, Transitions, was the magazine asked me to do an on the cover little booklet about transition. And Practical Preschool said, could I turn it into a book? So I did. That's three or four years ago. Well, more than that now, because I've been an independent consultant nearly 4 years.
Wow.
And then very, very bizarrely, again, I say there's a lot of serendipitous moments in all of this. Year before last, I was just thinking about, I wonder if Practical Preschool would like another book, but I don't know what it's going to be about yet. And they pinged me an email as I was having these thoughts to say, would I please write one on emotional literacy, which was finished by April last year and when was it published? Not ever so many months ago now.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
But that was a fascinating book to write, and that was really, for me, really thought-provoking.
Great. And obviously that kind of leads us on that book that you talked about, which was about transitions.
Yeah.
That kind of leading us onto my next question. So you're going to be talking to us about transitions. What does this look like in early childhood?
And we've only got half an hour.
I know. I do apologise. And that's only the second question. We've got more questions.
Okay, well, I think actually you've heard me speak about transitions before, haven't you? Yes. And I think the talk that you heard me give was called something like Inside, Outside and Upside Down.
That's right, yeah.
Because when we talk about transitions in early childhood, again, when I wrote that first book, I learned ever such a lot. We get the word transition and we think so often it's just about moving from playgroup or nursery into reception class, moving from reception class into year one. But of course it's not. It's a myriad of other things. There's the horizontal transitions, there's the vertical transitions, the things we do. Well, for example, within the last half hour, I've moved from a meeting to get a cup of tea to come and talk to you. Well, that's three transitions.
Yeah.
It's more than just thinking about big transitions. It's about little transitions. So when we're talking about transitions in early years, we have to reflect on the fact that the children we're working with are very, very young in not only number of years, but in terms of life experience. Now, I have, let's just say, a few years of life experience without putting too fine points on it. And I know how to wind up attendance at one meeting, make a cup of tea and move into another one.
Yeah.
But when you're working with the youngest children who maybe haven't had ever so many changes in their lives, they're changing into a different person every time they do a different thing. And when they step into your setting, whatever your setting may be, they suddenly become a different person.
Yeah.
They've gone from being that person at home in their family to that person in a completely different place with quite a few different people and quite a few different objects and ways of doing things. But they might not necessarily have had the experiences to cope with it. So we really have to fine tune what we mean by transition and picture what they might look like. And give the children the tools, if you like, to use to get through. And it's particularly pertinent at the moment, isn't it, with all this awful illness that we're surrounded with and the different ways people are dealing with things.
I mean, would you say that, like, as an adult, as you know, let's put ourselves in a practitioner's shoes.
Yeah.
And we've kind of learnt those transitions through our stages of becoming an adult, haven't we? So we're very much you know, and obviously transitions continue throughout life, but actually we can understand why we're doing things, whereas
exactly,
you know,
yeah, we know that something is safe to do without even thinking about it.
Yeah,
we know the processes that we go through. I mean, it's a bit like I say, I made a cup of tea just now. I didn't have to actively think, what do I need to do to make a cup of tea? I just did it. Like driving a car, we don't give it a second thought. Whereas if you look at the youngest children who come into our settings, until they've got used to what's happening in there, they don't necessarily know what's going to happen next or how they're going to cope with it.
Yeah.
Absolute classic one is when children are asked to stop what they're doing and listen to the adult, and then some of them don't because they're really engaged in what they're doing.
Mm.
And then, of course, the instant reaction is often from the adult to maybe call out that child's name and say, I've told you to stop what you're doing. Well, if we're going to be fair to that child, why is what the teacher said they've got to do more important than what they're enjoying?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned about me being at the talk that you did, and I think it was at the EY Matters conference.
It was in Bath, wasn't it?
And you literally blew me away, because there was something that you said, and it never really kind of got to me until you said it. And it was, right, let's put our coats on. And it was about, you know, like getting their coats on to go outside. And you've got to really kind of position yourself in the child's shoes, haven't you, and thinking, well, what does putting your coat on mean normally? Well, it means that you're going home.
Yeah.
But actually, to me, it's like, put your coats on, it's cold, we're going outside to play.
Yeah.
Actually,
and if you've struggled to come to the setting that morning, your coat is your, or that's a sign I'm going home again.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well, I think I said it at Bath, that's always struck me as so important. Children have not asked to be at your setting. Somebody's made that decision for them.
Yeah.
And that is hugely powerful. As adults, we very rarely ever end up somewhere we didn't ask to be. I mean, I'm sure there are
questions, though, Sue. I think those questions, those reflective questions, are so important as a practitioner, because it is seeing it through the eyes of the child, isn't it?
As near as we can. I mean, we
as
can,
as we can, obviously. Yeah. It was the coats that got me.
Yes.
It's just something so simple, yet so powerful. And, it just made me stop and think. I mean, as you know, I was fiddling around with your laptop on your table, if you remember.
I do remember that.
When you said it, you know, it was like a pin could drop, because we all started actually really thinking about it. And
we make a lot of assumptions, and it's a fascinating time. September is a fascinating time. And we've all been there. We've just finished with one cohort of children in the summer term. And I know it's different this year, so you'll have to forgive me. I'm talking more in normal times, if you like. You just finished with one set of children who've got used to you over a year. And then a whole new set come in September, and they don't know you, and they don't know what you think and how you respond to stuff and what your routines look like. And they don't just fall into place in the way that your last lot did, because you'd got them into that habit. And we have to rethink everything again, which I think is actually a really good thing. But as adults, we assume an awful lot of children. We assume they know what we're going to say. Mm. And again, I can't remember exactly all the things I did at Bath, because I talk about transition a lot.
Yeah.
We assume they know what lineup means. We assume they know what sit with your legs crossed means, which is a wicked thing to do to small children, because it's really uncomfortable. But when they're used to being able to talk to their family at home when they feel like it, but when they're in certain situations, the adult in charge will only let them speak if they put their hand up and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. That we kind of take for granted, really.
Exactly.
I mean, the one of the biggest ones for me when I was a nursery teacher was, and it was your talk really that kind of catapulted me back to, you know, when I was standing at that door and, you know, in the parents bringing their children, and the parents are going through a transition as well, aren't they?
You know, they absolutely are. In fact, we all are. And it's I'm glad you brought that piece into it, because every single one of us on that day is going through a transition, because we may have met those children and families once or twice. This year, we may not have met them at all. We may have just corresponded with them or met them through a Zoom meeting or something.
Yeah.
We don't actually know anything really about how those families feel or act. Some families may have had, and it's interesting, this was said to me when I was a very new teacher, and I think it still applies today. Some families have had a very bad time at school themselves, and that's their picture of school. Therefore, they're not very happy that their children are going to school.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's still the case. So to send their child to school is to send their child into something that they hated themselves. So they've got their own bias, and teachers were people you didn't get on with.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and then the kind of can pass that on to the child and how the child feels about
ever so easily.
Yeah, yeah. Because they can pick up on that, can't they? They can pick up on the emotions of the parent, you know, on the way to school or however, you know.
There's so many things to do with transition that unless we sit and think about it, we completely miss. There's that whole talk about you're going to big school.
Yeah.
Well, that's frankly terrifying if you don't want to go to the big school because you like your nursery and you like your preschool. And
no, I don't want to go.
I'm fine. I like nursery, thanks.
So this leads me on to question number three, which what kind of, I mean, we don't want you to tell us too much, because obviously what we want is for people to book onto your programs, onto your courses. But what steps can we take initially to support a child or a parent or a carer when, say for instance, let's use a scenario. So I'm a nursery practitioner, I've got this new child starting. What type of steps would I take for when that child comes to the nursery?
The steps would start a while before that child comes, if at all possible. I mean, I know we all have the instances where a child moves rapidly into the area and starts with you.
Yes.
And then we deal with those as sensitively as we possibly can. But if you know the children are coming with enough advance warning, it's about making everything as transparent, as familiar as you possibly can, and being as open and as familiar with the families as you possibly can. I don't mean intrusive.
No.
I'm a big fan of home visits. I know, again, at this particular time that's really, really difficult, but I've heard of people setting up some wonderful conference calls and all sorts of things, chatting to families and chatting to the children on screens and things, and it's really nice. But if you can do a home visit, it's one of the most powerful things. And I'm very particular about how home visits are done. I definitely do not advise that you go in with a shed load of questions and a clipboard.
Yeah.
Because that is horribly intimidating. And also, it has to be on the family's own terms. If what we used to do at my school when I introduced home visits was we'd have a meeting in one summer evening at school and we'd have a big chart on the wall. And there was no pressure, but if you wanted a home visit as a family, you just signed your name up on the chart. And then we took the chart down and we looked at all the families who'd requested a visit, and then we contacted all the ones whose names weren't there. And we arranged completely different things for them. I mean, not everybody in the world wants strangers in their house. Not everybody in the world is comfortable with their type of accommodation, or they may be a bit embarrassed or whatever. So I've done, in inverted commas, home visits in local coffee shops. I've met parents there because they didn't want me to see their home. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I've met parents in school with a cup of tea because they didn't want me to go to their house. So it's about being completely You are a guest, if you like. You have to tread carefully and make it fun and interesting. We used to take story sacks out and play with the children and just chat with the parents.
Yeah.
And give them the time and make it free and easy. And if the parent wanted to share something confidential with you, then they had that confidence that you would, or somebody they could trust.
Yeah. And you were in there, you were in their home, really.
Exactly. I mean,
they're welcoming you into their home, aren't they?
Exactly. I mean, we used to laugh because we could almost make a tick list ourselves of the number of people whose homes had been newly decorated.
Yeah.
It's about definitely not making judgments either. I know, unfortunately, I see too many Facebook type conversations where people are using home visits to fill in forms, and it's not about that. It's not about making judgments. It's not about, you might log something of concern to yourself. You can't help it if you notice something. But it's about a comfortable few minutes with that family where you try and make friends as best you can.
Mm. Well, it's kind of for me, when I did home visits, it was very much about learning about the child and the family, but it also opened up an element of, you knew where this child and family were coming from, the community.
Exactly.
And I say, actually, how difficult things can be in your community for these families as well.
I think that's a really valuable, and it's not about us judging how difficult it is either. And it's about them being able to trust you.
Yeah.
So that they know forever after that, they can come and chat with you if they've got a worry or a concern.
Yeah.
Or they just need someone to talk to.
I mean, for me, what I found was, for example, I did a couple of visits, you know, to a couple of homes that was in quite a rural part of where, you know, the school was. But there were no facilities out there. There was nothing for them. You know, there wasn't a library. There wasn't even a shop. Mm. You know, and it just opens up your eyes that actually that
it really makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you said to the parents, you know, this is quite isolated, you know, and they were like, oh, yes, you know, and they'd open up a whole conversation that they've never kind of, you know, I probably was the first person they've spoken to as an adult, you know, for a long time.
And that's the kind of relationship you want, rather than all the children turn up on day one and you make a massive assumption about what they are all able to access in their home lives.
And when I always remember one, Sue. Sorry. I did a home visit and she said, oh, you're not leaving now, are you? She said, it's the first time my child's actually moved away from my side. And I just thought, you know, that's so powerful.
That's lovely.
She wanted us to stay. There was me and Mrs. Byrne and they wanted us to stay. And I just said, oh, no, you know, we've got to go. We've got another visit to do. She was like, oh, gosh, you know, I wish you'd come round more often, you know.
But that's exactly the relationship you want, isn't it? There's that trust already.
Yeah, but at the time, Sue, you know, I was 21, I'd just qualified. I don't think I kind of valued that as much as I do now, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
I didn't see it. I did, you know, to me it was just I've got to do a home visit, something that I've got to do. What I know now, if I did those home visits again, I probably would approach them very differently. And see them very differently. But at the age of 21, I don't know if I valued them as much as I probably should have.
It's an interesting step in the right direction, though, that she said that she didn't want you to go. She could have hassled you out of the door very fast, so she didn't want you there.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And I think as well, without wishing to put too sexist a point on it, it's very nice to have had a young man doing a home visit.
Yeah.
In early years, because there's not enough of that around.
Somebody asked me that question. I think it might have been Maureen, because I've done a podcast with Maureen Hunt, and it was discussed about how, you know, when I went into a children's centre and you know, as a children's centre teacher and then you know, coordinator for family support, and I've got to say, when I did the new birth visits and all those home visits, it was embraced, actually. I never
it must have been.
The mums actually preferred it in some way. I that's the only way I could envisage it. It was different, but it was embraced, and I never once felt, that being a male was a barrier. But those home visits were important.
They're hugely important, and I would recommend, if at all possible, every setting of any type. And I mean, I've got in the transitions book, I've got some case studies, one of which is about childminders, and childminders even were doing some home visits. It's about trust.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'll share the book links with the podcast, so that people can get hold of them. And I mean, I have mentioned it. You do offer training, don't you? You offer training in and courses and.
Oh, I do. Yes. Yeah.
All of this. So if anybody's interested, they can contact you. So those are some really good. I mean, home visits for me is probably one of the key points of supporting those transitions of children. So it's great that we've highlighted that.
Yeah, and that came from your question you asked about children moving into the setting and making that transition easy for you. For them, rather. Well, it's got to be easy for you as well, but the whole thing has to hinge around trust and transparency and no nasty surprises.
Yeah.
And at the moment, we can't necessarily do home visits. But we can still do social stories and photographs and send chatty links through various electronic devices. And also, I think I use teachers to cover everybody. So I mean qualified, non-qualified, everything. Teachers are they expect parents and families to open up about themselves, but they never share their own things. So I don't mean real deep innermost secrets, but you know, what are your hobbies as a teacher? What are your likes and dislikes?
Yeah.
It's that open respect and transparency and trusting each other, I think, is the most important, however you choose to do it.
Yeah, that relationship's really important.
Oh, it's massive. You cannot underestimate the relationship.
Like I say, if you've never really kind of thought about transitions as an early years professional or teacher, Sue definitely gets you thinking. I mean, I can't think. You know, at that conference, I mean, it's the first time you've probably ever heard me be quiet, because I was tweeting about it, and I think I said, you know, this was a really pivotal moment for me, where I actually reflected on the things that I just take for granted as a teacher, for example, and what are my expectations are of children. That actually, you know, I keep going back to the coat, but it's so powerful, you know. And now you've talked about home visits, and it just catapults me back to a reflective opportunity of when I did home visits, how much did I value them? As much as I potentially could have. So it's a really good opportunity, I think, for us to be able to reflect.
I think we need to do a reflection on it every year when we're expecting new children to come through.
Yeah.
And I did, I think it was my last Kinderly webinar. It was about starting, it was getting ready for school. And I so clearly remember my first day at infant school, which was when you was like in the Victorian age, obviously.
I was going to say, can you remember that?
I thought
you were waiting for that work. You'd be honest.
Yes, I was. I was. So I thought I'd do it first. And I'd been to nursery school. My friend Caroline and I used to go two or three mornings a week to a lady called Miss Prescott and her nursery school in her conservatory. So I was quite used to going to a setting. And then we went to the local infant school. And I remember very clearly my classroom. That school is still there, in fact. I remember the classroom, and they had one of those traditional wooden rocking horses, not that rocked, but they went backwards and forwards on a stand. And I remember getting on it and I couldn't get off because I was too small and nobody noticed. And I remember being really upset. And then I remember lunchtime, I just followed the crowd. And in those days, lots of people went home for lunch, but I was meant to stay for school dinners and I didn't realise. And I walked out of the backs of the school, the back of the school to an entrance I didn't know about and started to follow people down the path because I didn't know what was happening. And it was only when somebody looked, noticed me and brought me back into school again, otherwise I could have been lost. And there's an awful lot of assumptions that as adults we make about children knowing stuff when they don't. So we have to really do a proper rethink every year when a new child, or throughout the year when a new child arrives, to make things as transparent and obvious as we possibly can.
Yeah, we do. And it is those assumptions really that we take for granted. I don't think it's done
Well, it's not
intentionally.
deliberate.
Yeah, but
And
it's.
we're all busy adults and we all know what we need to get through and what we want to get on with, but we do need to draw a breath occasionally and think, hold on a minute.
Okay, that's great. So that leads us on to our fourth question, which is we've heard a little bit about your books and some of the webinars that you're doing and blogs and articles, but are we likely to see anything from you moving forwards in the near future? So what's next for Dr. Sue?
What's next for Dr. Sue? Right, Dr. Sue is going, as most people are at the moment, much more online. And the first thing that I am working on with the lovely Jules from Early Years Matters is I am going to be putting my wellbeing and involvement Leuven scale stuff into online training.
Right, okay.
That was a request, actually. I've had two or three requests since lockdown began.
Yeah.
Could I do this? This is from random people who've contacted me via my Facebook page. So my first set of online training is going to be, we're looking at doing packages, but it's going to be the wellbeing and involvement stuff first. I have been, when I was first an early years advisor for Hounslow, we were very fortunate to have Professor Ferrileivis come over and work with us. And he did a conference one day, and then the next day he worked with just us as a team. And he supported me to set up my own wellbeing and involvement cluster group throughout the local authority. So I am fortunate that I have had my training straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And obviously, it's developed over the years, but it has proved incredibly popular over the years in one form and another. And I am putting packages out electronically for people to buy into. We're doing various ways of doing it, but Jules and I are working on that. So the next bit is
So
the
you're
online.
going digital then, so
I'm
you
going digital, but I
Wow.
really, really want to get back in with the children.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the Leicestershire schools I'm doing a project with, and we're doing that digitally at the moment, but it's not the same as being in the school. That's
And are we likely to say, I know that we've just talked about your well-being book as not long emotional literacy. Is it
What's it
emotional?
called? It's called, is it Understanding Emotional
It's
Literacy in the Early
yes, yeah,
Years or something?
emotional. Yeah. Are we likely to see another book from you in the near future?
Not at the moment, although I've had a book proposal in with Routledge for about 3 years.
Right.
And they ask me every so often to review somebody else's book proposal. And then they say, would you like to start writing yours yet? That was something else that was based on an Early Years Educator article, in fact. And it kind of comes out of my doctoral thesis as well. But it's the doctoral thesis was about the mismatch of policy into practice. And the book proposal is all about the myths that come out of early years. And I mean, it drives me barmy, and it probably does you as well. The amount of complete made-up rubbish that comes out on social media and sometimes in publications.
I think
So.
what's really, I mean, I'm going to say this, what's really lovely is that actually you know, when you deliver your training and I mean the one that you delivered at the EY Matters conference, I was literally blown away with no, because I think you what you did for us as practitioners is that you gave us a lens through the child, the parent, the carer, and the professional. So you triangulated, and I was really, really kind of in awe of that. Really, it got me as a you know. I mean, I know I'm an academic now, you know, and I still never lose my practice. I always say I could probably still roll around the floor just as much as anyone else, but it blew me away really, and it's always stayed with me. And I always remember going back to the university and saying to the students, oh my God, you know, Dr. Sue, you know, you've got to go and listen to her thing. But yeah, I mean,
really honoured to hear you say that, because it's the way I tell them. Who sits the way I tell them? It's some comedian in the dark ages, probably. Frank Carson, I think.
I don't even know who that is.
Of course you don't. Can we cut that bit out? I don't do it deliberately, but I think I possibly do, if that makes sense. Yeah. It was subconscious to start with, but I frame all of my training. And if you've ever heard me more than once, I always use what, why and how. And I've done it again tomorrow with the webinar for Kinderly on, I'm doing child-led learning tomorrow. Yeah. And I always try to look at it through the different voices. And I always try to look at it through what, why and how.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just, the thing is, it's not just us involved in what we do. And there are so many interpretations, and I mean, I'm adding another layer of interpretation, of course I am, because I'm saying stuff, but it's about unpicking what those interpretations are and using them to the best of what we can do.
Yeah, and I think those questions, you know, those questions that you've just said, what, why, how, are applicable to us as all practitioners, really. Mm. Continually, isn't it? They're actually good reflective tools that we,
yeah. I can't remember how I even started it, but I do know if I'm thrown something to write about or think about,
yeah,
and I don't know the way into it, I will start by mapping it out against what, why and how, and then the answers will start flowing.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So so that leads us on to our last question, which I ask absolutely everybody. Which is, if I was a genie in a lamp, first of all, I'd be a very colourful genie.
I was going to say, would you be blue?
Well, you'd definitely know that I'd be coming out of the lamp. if I could grant you three wishes, what would they be?
Okay, I thought long and hard about this. I listened
everyone
to the...
Does, and I don't know why, but everyone does. I mean, I'm still waiting for somebody to say that they want to win the lottery, but, you know... but anyway, go on.
I don't play the lottery, so that'd be a bit difficult, wouldn't it? I thought long and hard about it. I wasn't going to, but I listened to lovely Helen's podcast with you the other day, and hers was so well thought out. I thought, God, I better do something about this. I mean, they're not what you would call rocket science. But my first wish, and this has come to me even more clearly when I've been writing this webinar for Kinderly actually, yes, is that I wish that everybody would remember that every child is unique.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Particularly powerful at the moment, whereas the lovely Pam Jarvis says that the government treats every four-year-old as if it was a 14-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not, and even 14-year-olds aren't all the same. You know my one-size-fits-all slide with the Converse trainers. It doesn't. My second wish is that no child ever sees itself as a failure. And that's massively down to us as adults in classrooms, unfortunately, sometimes. And my third wish is that every child is excited and positively challenged by learning.
Oh.
And I just realised that every one of those is about the children.
It's about the child. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
And I didn't realise that till I read them out loud.
Oh, and they're all so powerful. The second one for me, I think, is the one that I probably would say. I mean, they're all...
That no child sees themselves as a failure.
Yeah. Because we all have, I think, let's be honest here, if we reflect back on our education or, you know, learning, there's always a point where we felt like that.
Well, I think I've told you that I was a school failure. I came out with 2 O-levels.
Yeah.
And 1 A-level.
And now look at you. You've,
yeah.
You've flown the nest. You've come from the dinosaur age. I mean, what more can we ask for? So, I mean, you know. People are going to, can we just clarify that me and Sue are actually very good friends and you know, I don't normally speak to my guests like this. I think it's really important that I let people know that.
Yeah. I think you're all right to clarify that. I wouldn't still be talking to you on this podcast.
No, I know.
I might have just empty chaired you.
Well, and Sue... This leads us to the end of the podcast. And can I just say, I'm absolutely blown away and in awe, really. And I think that really your 3 wishes just completely showed how child-centred we need to be, and specifically with transitions of early childhood.
Can I just add a rider on those 3 yes. wishes in the transition? I realise that they're all about the child, but behind those 3 wishes is the adult making it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all about that transition again.
Oh, Sue, that's your next book. That has to be the next book.
What does?
The adult behind the child, the transitions.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay.
Let's hope about the child.
I am not agreeing to that because people would be like, you know, people would be like, yeah, Sue, come on, we want that. Sue, thank you so much. And have you enjoyed it?
I really have, thank you.
Good. And just to clarify, everyone, Sue was very, very nervous.
I was.
She made a cup of coffee in her cat mug.
It's tea.
But be honest, Sue, it was like we're down at the coffee shop just having a chat.
Well, it's because we, as you pointed out to everybody, we are friends anyway, so it was good.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And to everybody, make sure that you share Sue's discussion on transitions. I could safely say it's very child-centred, so make sure you put that into your social media posts as well. Remember to follow #TeamEarlyChildhood, and that's a goodbye from me. And thank you very much, Dr. Sue.
Thank you very much, Aaron. It's been good to talk.
And you. Thank you. See you soon.
Bye.